We are going to continue our discussion on boundaries this morning. And for those of you guys that might have missed one or two of the last 2 weeks, we covered boundaries around time and around the quantity of time that we spend with people, but also the quality of time. And last week, I think we had a pretty intense, 2 weeks ago, pardon me, before Memorial Day, we had a pretty intense discussion around how the world in which we live, which is very media, electronic, always connected, oriented, how that impacts our relationships with others. So if you missed that, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it and answer the questions with your spouse, with your partner, because I think it was a really thought-provoking time that we had together. Well, this morning, we transition and we move on. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about Andy Balistrieri. So when I was growing up in Pittsburgh, in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, there was a boy that lived a couple neighborhoods over. His cousins lived in my neighborhood, and his name was Andy Balistrieri. And Andy Balistrieri's family had a meatpacking business. So Balistrieri Meats, I believe it was. And so they were a pretty wealthy family. And Andy had everything. He always had the newest toy. He always had the coolest bike. He just had everything. And he was a pretty athletic kid. But Andy always got into trouble. Always got into trouble. You know kids like this? I mean, the kid just, like, he should have had a trouble t-shirt. I mean, the kid, everywhere he turned, something bad was going to happen. Andy was always the one that said, hey, I wonder if that is flammable. Andy was always the one that said, I wonder how fast I can stand on my handlebars. Andy always said, you know, I think we could do this bigger and better. Andy was always getting into stuff. Andy in elementary school got kicked out multiple times. So Andy was a fighter. So he would often get into little scuffs and he would get kicked out and then he would come back. One morning, I went to a Catholic grade school, and one morning the nuns came in, and there were eggs all over the side of the building. And you can kind of guess whose eggs they belonged to. That was Andy. So then he got kicked out, and Andy and I were actually in the same grade, and we tracked all through elementary school, all through middle school, all through high school together. But the difference was I was a pretty consistent student where Andy was sometimes there, and then he wasn't there, and then he went away to boarding school, and then he came back, and then he went away to like some military school, and then he came back, and then I saw him again in high school. He was gone for like 3 years, and then I saw him again in high school. He came back. That was short-lived. 6 months later, he's gone from the public high school, and I have no idea where Andy is to this day. But what I knew, even maybe, I don't know. I don't know if Andy looks good in stripes or not. I'm not sure. Maybe that was his future. I'm not sure. But Andy was always into trouble. And even as young as I was, even as clueless as I was, I'm clueless now, even more clueless back then, there was something in me that said, Andy's probably not the best person to hang out with. Even though he was funny, and even though he had cool toys, and even though he would do things that were humorous and were a lot of fun, he probably wasn't the best person for me to be spending time with. And if you would have asked the other people that were in our circles, they would have said the same thing. And if you would have asked parents, they probably would have said the same thing too. You know, that Andy guy, he's probably not the best person for you to be hanging out with, Jason. Isn't it funny that we can so easily see that in some of us that are parents now? We see that in the kids that hang out with our kids. We're like, yeah, that's probably not a good fit for you. No, I would rather you not spend time with that family, with that kid. We see that so clearly, but yet at times we miss it in our own lives. Isn't that strange how that works? How there's people that we spend time with, some by choice, some because we're forced to, because we work with them, or because they're sitting next to us at home front, or no. I don't know why you're forced to spend time with some of these people, but we should know, like, this probably isn't the best person for me to be spending time with, but yet we still do. And this happens throughout our walks. Like, some of you probably have friends from college that you probably should have ended that relationship long time ago. Or you have somebody that used to work with years ago, and yeah, he's not the best influence. Yeah, he doesn't really talk to his wife very respectfully. I mean, ball and chain isn't that bad of an expression, but repeatedly about your wife, not a good thing to be saying. And I probably shouldn't hang out with that person, but they're so fun, or they're a great golfer, and they complete my foursome, and whatever. But we continue to go down this path, even though we know, just like Andy, it's probably not the best person that we should be spending time with. And actually, God doesn't just leave us out there. He speaks a lot about this topic. He talks a lot about the people that we surround ourselves with. And I would argue this morning that one very critical boundary that we all need to make in our lives, and especially because of the relationship we have with our partner, our fiance, the person that we just married, we have to be very protective about the type of friendships that we have as we walk along. And God tells us a lot about this. In Proverbs, he talks a lot about the fool. And I know you guys are probably picking this up by now. I love the book of Proverbs. I spend a lot of time in the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is one of the wisdom books. Wisdom, my favorite definition for wisdom is a skill for living. Wisdom is a skill for living. So it's literally God showing us how to live in such a way that glorifies him and in a way that will bring glory and honor to him in the end. It's the skill for living. And when we look at Proverbs, Proverbs has a lot to say about friendships. We're going to turn to one spot to begin and see what Proverbs says. And I'm not going to bring this up because it's a long passage, but I'm just going to read it to you. This is Proverbs chapter 1. So right smack in the beginning of Proverbs, the Lord says to us through his author, I have something very important to tell you about the people that you walk with, about the people that you spend time with. He says this, my son. Now, this is Solomon writing to his sons, but it's a picture of God writing to us as his sons and daughters. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Do not spend time with the sinner. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down into the pit. We shall find all precious good. We shall fill our houses with plunder, in other words, stolen or taken things. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. So this is the call of the unwise to someone that is naive and is looking for friends. It's the call. It's, you know, come in. You know, not that you're going to go out and murder someone with these people, but come in, join us. We have things to do. We're going to have plunder. We're going to have fun. We're going to have a good time. We're going to light things on fire. We're going to talk about our wives. We're going to do all this fun stuff. We're going to go to the movies and see this. We're going to go out to the bar and do this. We're going to go out after hours and do this. We're going to go golf, but afterwards we're going to do this. We're going to hang out with these kind of people. It's the call. Come, come, let's be friends. Join us and be a part of this. Proverbs 13:20 says this, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. The companion of fools will suffer harm. So let's define a few things in this verse here, if you might not be familiar. So in Proverbs, when it refers to the wise is someone that has accepted Christ as Savior and Lord. The wise is someone that pursues the Lord. The wise person is a follower of Christ. The wise, someone that is pursuing the Lord. A fool is the state of being unwise. Okay, so let me differentiate. We all act foolishly sometimes. Now, there's a good chance that before the end of the day, I'll say something or do something that I regret. Something will come out of this mouth and I'm like, oh, come back. We all act foolishly at times. We all have foolish behavior at times. Whether we are a follower of Jesus or not a follower of Jesus, we still act foolishly. But a fool, being defined as a fool, I pray none of you would define yourselves or be defined by others as a fool. A fool is someone that does not know Jesus, that has a bent towards things that are against God, that has a bent in a direction not aimed towards honoring the Lord. In other words, it's an unsaved person. It's not necessarily an evil person, but it's just someone that does not have the wisdom of knowing Christ and is therefore not saved, not a follower of Christ. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Now, what's really interesting is that, and I think I've shared this with you before, Proverbs was the last book accepted into the canon of Scripture. And one of the reasons why Proverbs was the last book accepted into the canon is because there's so many seemingly controversial or contradictory statements in the book. So here we see, don't be a company of a fool. Don't spend time with a fool. But elsewhere, we actually read in Proverbs that we should spend time with the fool. So you see, as the early church fathers are looking at the book, they're like, should we bring this one in or not? There's some contradictory statements in there. But what we have to remember is the book of Proverbs is not a book of absolute truth. It's a book of absolute truisms, which means that they apply given the situation. So what I want to be clear about here, because some of you, even with my initial statements, you're like, oh, that you take a step back. Oh, he's going to pick on my college friends. Oh, he's going to pick on my coworkers. He's telling me I shouldn't be friends with these people. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. Proverbs is a book of truisms. It's wisdom is seeing where you are, seeing the situation, and saying, based on this situation, what is the wise thing to do? So I am not saying that you should not be friends with people that are not Christians. Not saying that at all. That is like saying, okay, let's do away with all potential customers for RBC. If I could use that as a business analogy. That's like saying, forget this whole evangelism thing. Everything that talks about evangelism, just throw it out the door. We're just going to, just the people at Homefront. We only talk to people at Homefront. We only talk to people at RBC. We only talk to other homeschoolers. We only talk to other people at the private school. But no, we don't want to talk about it because they might bring bad things into our lives. We don't want to do that. That's not our call from the Lord, is to live in this bubble and close everything up. That's not the call at all. So I'm not saying just talk to Christians or only be friends with Christians. What I'm saying is be wise about your friendships. Make smart choices about your friendships. I think of it this way. We need a friendometer. The friendometer says, this isn't the best friendship that I should be in. I am saying sometimes there are friendships that you should end. And if the friendometer scores it to such a point that you think, you and your spouse or your partner think, you know, this is really just not a good friendship. There's nothing good about it. And I'll give you an example of that. A friendship, if you've been hanging out with a guy from college and he's not a Christian, he's the blatant atheist, God might be calling you to share Christ with him. But if he is just closed off, will not listen to anything, you've invested years, and all that happens is he changes you more than you change him. Close attention to that. He changes you. She changes you more than you change her. Sever that relationship because it's not a productive one to have. Now, if there's been change and you feel like that person is coming along and actually changing more like you, becoming a better person and kind of inching toward, I'll call them a pre-Christian, inching toward Christianity, then God has a plan in that. But it just wouldn't be wise to continue a relationship with someone that is changing you more than you're changing them. Does that make sense? Be wise about your friendships. Choose carefully. Avoid the fool when necessary. Not necessarily all the time, but when necessary. Spend time with people in your community. Some of my best friends in my neighborhood are not Christians. I love spending time with them. We have great conversations about Christianity versus non-Christianity. They have all different views. They're some of my best friends. I love spending time with them. But I have to be careful if that's changing me, and that's where the friendometer kicks in. Now, I do want to spend time before I wrap up here. I'm going to go into one specific area. I purposely leave friendship vague, and I think it's a good discussion for you to have with your spouse, with your partner. One specific area, the opposite sex. We have to be incredibly careful as followers of Christ when we have friendships with the opposite sex. I am not saying that we should not have any at all, though I'm going to tell you my story, and I'm going to ask that you prayerfully consider it. What I am saying is that the Lord has a lot to say about friendship, and he has a lot to say about adultery, and he has a lot to say about how we interact with those of the opposite sex. Most people don't walk into marriage and say, I just can't wait for the day when I have an affair. I mean, she's good, he's good, but I'm just waiting for somebody better to come along so I can cheat on my wife, on my husband, with her, with a him. Nobody enters into marriage that way. People enter a marriage saying, this is it. This is the one I want to be with the rest of my life. She is it. He is it. This is a lifelong commitment. So answer, riddle me this. Why do the majority of adulterous relationships start with friendship? We think of adultery as, okay, he goes out and hires a prostitute. She goes out and she just wants something physical. We think about those adulterous relationships. The reality is that the majority of adulterous relationships start with a friend. It's someone that you, oh, we're just friends. Oh, we're just coworkers. We just spend time together. It's not a big deal. Oh, we just grab lunch. We were working late. We had a project due. It was just her and I. She was the only one that was the right fit for the job. He was the only one. There's nothing going on. No, you don't have to think anything. We're just coworkers. We're just friends. She's just a neighbor. He's just a neighbor. But what happens is it evolves into something else. Now, a little bit about my personality before I share this story. So I've always been better friends with girls than I've been with guys. I don't know why that's the case. Okay, so, and back to the point Bill made way back at the beginning of the series. Some of these things apply more so than others to you, and that's part of the discernment that you have as we go through these series. What boundaries are needed? How challenging is it going to be to set up that boundary? So my bent may be very different than your bent, but I share it with you to give you a context for the story. So I've always had more friends that were female than friends that were male. I've had male friends, but in even as I've spoken at times, many of the ladies in here have come up and been like, I'm wired just like you. Well, that's why I click with females. I tend to, you know, whatever that is in me, but I've just clicked and I've always found it easier to have friendships with females all through grade school, all through high school, all through college. So that's how I'm wired. Now, looking back as a follower of Christ, at the age of 26, giving my life to Christ, looking back, I say, I can't continue to operate in that same way because that's a dangerous area for me. About 7 years ago, I've been at RBC 4 years. This was about 3 years before I left Adobe. The Lord started doing really cool things. I had a Bible study going on in Adobe in my secular workplace. He partnered me, so I was a sales guy and I had an engineer. My engineer was a Christian, so we would always travel together, and he was a great friend, and we could have these great conversations on the road because if I was going to be away from my family, at least I could have good conversations with a guy I really enjoyed. And then the Lord, I felt like he was really continuing to work because we still got to share the gospel and reach out to other people in Adobe, in that community, and even within our customer base and have good conversations with them. And then a woman joined the team to support me in another way. There were a bunch of folks that kind of supported the account managers. And she was a Christian too. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, the Lord's bringing together all these perfect pieces for the team that I get to work with. And I started developing a friendship with her. And yeah, we would inevitably go on sales calls together, me and her and this sales engineer, and we had to spend a lot of time together because we were going through the accounts together and talking about all the things that we had to do. Anyway, long story, very, very short. One day I came home and Bridget said, you know, we have some guidelines in place around relationship. And I like this girl. She's been over our house for dinner. Her husband has been over our house for dinner. And I like her and I enjoy her. But I feel like because she's a Christian, some of the rules aren't applying right now that we had set up within our relationship. And I was like, you know what, Bridge? It was like, you know, at first I was like, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about. It's not a big deal. And then as I sat back, I was like, Lord, do you have something here for me? And it was obvious that I was treating her differently than I would treat a neighbor or someone else. And so I was like, Bridge, you're absolutely right. I'm going to go talk to her. So Monday morning, I went in and I said, you have not done anything wrong. There's nothing going on here at all. I know that. You know that. but I have some guidelines with my wife, and I've stepped over those, and I'm sorry that you were in the middle of this. You haven't done anything, but this is what I need to do going forward, and I'm going to share with you some of those guidelines at the end. And she was really upset. She called Bridget. She said, you know, there's nothing going on, and I'm really sorry that you felt that way, or do you not like me anymore? It was messy. It was really messy, and it was majority my fault because I shouldn't have let it get to that point. About 6 months later, that woman got divorced. If I would have continued to be friends with her, I would have been one of the confidants through that process because she considered me a really close friend. We were close friends. And she would have talked to me. She was just on the verge of starting to talk like, this isn't great in our marriage, this isn't great. But I would have been one of the confidants. And I'm not saying anything would have happened. I don't know. All I know is this. I would not want myself to be in a position where something could have happened. Because we have to be very careful with friendships with the opposite sex. And one little side note, I can't speak to the ladies on this point, but I will speak to the guys. I don't know what it is about women, but they have like a sixth sense in a lot of freaky, scary areas. But one of the areas where they have very keen insight, if your wife ever walks up to you and says, I'm not crazy about her. Don't ever talk to her again. I'm serious. Like if your wife ever has that little rub and she says something about that doesn't work for me, and it might be a situation where you can't just end the relationship, you have to continue work. But if she ever says, I have a funny feeling about her, end the relationship. I can't say guys are that switched on to even notice something like that. But I will say, ladies, if your husband does say that to you, call me because I want to meet this guy because I'm just not that aware. But if a husband says that to a wife, I would encourage you. But certainly, men, I'll speak to you. If your wife says that, pay close attention. Okay. And this was the last verse I wanted to share with you. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body. But the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. The Lord doesn't just say, walk away. The Lord doesn't say, turn your back. He says, flee. Flee, meaning run as fast as you can. If there's any hint of a relationship developing with someone that shouldn't be developing, run away from that relationship. Use the friend-o-meter. Okay, here's a couple examples, because we've been talking about fences and guardrails. I'm just going to pepper you with a few. So in the area of friends, fences. We describe fences as it's all-inclusive. It's a keep-out, keep-in. Some of you might want to consider fences in this area. Past friends, past friendships, past boyfriends, past girlfriends. Areas that can be very dangerous. College friends. Again, it's not all going to apply to you. If you've had issues with drinking, you probably shouldn't continue to hang out with the guy that likes to go to the bar for happy hour every Thursday. It's just not a good idea. It's not wise to be thinking like that. Guardrails. Guardrails are a little different. We're on a journey, we're going somewhere, and we just have to be careful because there's a few cliffs, but we're going to zoom past them. But watch out for the cliffs, stay on the road, and stay heading straight ahead. Here's a guardrail. In relationship, in friendships, you might have a select number of friends that your sole purpose in that friendship is to share the gospel with that person. That's awesome. If you're doing that, that is awesome. That is exactly what we're called to do. But be aware that that person does not think the same way that you do. So you have to be aware friendships start developing in that area. So evangelism is an area where I think you should have guardrails. And a lot of that comes through communication with your spouse. Another guardrail. Okay, say you do have a friendship that's been going on for a long time, but it's just not a good idea to go out at night with this person. So maybe it's a friend, but you know, you've noticed this trend. You know, there's a reason why police officers are more aware at night, more stuff happens at night, okay? If things are happening after hours, then maybe you just set a guardrail. I'm going to be friends, but literally, I'm just not going to go out with this person at nighttime. I'm just going to go out with them during the day. I can go out for lunch, but nighttime is always the temptation of another round, maybe head over, maybe go gamble a little bit, maybe go out to a club, whatever that temptation is. But during the daytime, the clubs aren't open and it's less of a temptation, right? So that's a guardrail. Now let me be specific in the area of the opposite sex. I told you I was going to share this with you before I close. So for me, for Jason, one of the arrangements that Bridget and I have made is I do not have close friendships with the opposite sex. So some of you are like, hey, if I've sent you an email, why do you always CC someone when you reply to me? It's because you're a woman and I'm not going to email you directly. I'll CC my wife. I'll CC Hannah, someone else on staff, just because I don't want that correspondence back and forth because I don't want to open a door. It's not that I don't like you. You're wonderful women. That's great. I don't open that door. I do not have friendships with the opposite sex. We have couple friends that we share with, but I have just learned myself and understand myself well enough to know that I purposely spend more time with the man than with the woman. It's just a fence that I've put up. Guardrails. There are women that I need to interact with. I interact with you guys. I interact with people for counseling. I interact, particularly when I was still in the business world, I worked with women. But Bridget and I set up guardrails. The guardrail was I didn't drive in the car alone with another woman. I would literally drag some poor soul to a meeting that didn't have to be at the meeting just so another person would be in the meeting, just so there were three of us. I would just say, oh, I really need you for this meeting. I didn't need him at all. I just dragged him to the meeting so I wouldn't be in the car alone with a woman. So I didn't go in the car alone with a woman. I didn't share a meal with a woman. I didn't go out to lunch. Now, some of you are saying, well, I work for a guy. I'm a woman. I work for a guy. He asked me out to lunch. I have to go. Then you have to work through that. The key is communication. So one way that you can work through that is you could set up when Bridget and I, if I have a counseling appointment and I do have to meet with a woman, I call her the minute before I walk into the counseling appointment and I call her the minute after. And some of you think that's crazy. That's too much. You could do the same thing. It's been a great guardrail for us in our relationship because Bridget knows I'm about to go into a meeting. Pray for me. I'm meeting with a woman one-on-one, door open, of course, people around, hopefully. But I'm meeting with a woman one-on-one, and then afterwards, I call her right away. We didn't talk about anything personal other than what's going on in her life. This is what's happening. They're just guardrails that we put in place to protect our relationship. I went a little long, a lot to cover this morning. The focus is on the friendometer. We're going to get into some questions now. Let me pray for us, and then I'll let you have your table time. Father, will you guide us and give us wisdom for the friendships that we have in our lives, both with the same sex, Lord, and with the opposite sex. Will you just guide us if there's any fences or guardrails that we need to put in place? And Lord, this might be hard, but if there's any friendships that just aren't good for our relationship with one another or for our relationship with you, Lord, Father, will you give us the wisdom of how to proceed? Father, bless the conversation now around the table, and we desire to give you all the glory. Amen. There's your questions. Describe a person of bad influence from your childhood. That's just kind of a